Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, the NBA and Stanley Cup Finals are both underway, and so far, both are a mixed bag in the ratings. Welcome to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, along with Drew Lerner. Please subscribe at the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Let's dig right into the numbers. Game 1 of the NBA Finals, under 11 million viewers, if ever so slightly, on ABC. The least watched Game 1 of the Finals outside of the COVID bubble since 2007. But the series bounced back in Game 2, the most watched Game 2 in 5 years. Let's all be honest here. We are in, with the exception of the NFL and women's basketball, we are in the relatively good stage of this industry, which is to say, 5 years ago, 12 million viewers for Game 2 of the Finals would have been a noticeably bad performance. Now it's a five-year high, just the way it is. Ultimately, the NBA got a better performance out of Dallas on Sunday than it did on Thursday, but the result was the same. The Celtics really look comfortably better than the Mavericks, and this looks like as much of a mismatch as last year's finals between Miami and Denver. But Miami got Game 2. Everyone kind of forgets Miami went into Denver and won Game 2 at Denver, one of those Eric Spoelstra specials there, and even though that was basically a sweep, it was a very uncompetitive series, it was 1-1. In fact, this Mavericks-Celtics is the first finals that's 2-0 after the first two games since 2021. Of course, Milwaukee came back from that 2-0 deficit to win the series. I don't think Dallas is going to be able to do that. But what the NBA needs right now, Dallas has got to win tomorrow night. Otherwise, even if it's not a sweep, the series will be over for viewers at that point. People are not interested in 3-0. I do think that based on the Game 2 numbers, there is potential for this series to still end up as the most watched in 5 years. Ultimately, we just have to have Game 3 and Game 4 go Dallas's way. You get to a sixth game, there's some drama, some intrigue. But again, it all depends on, you know, Kyrie's shooting and all these other things that are basketball related and beyond the purview of this podcast. Before I bring Drew in, I'll just quickly mention on the NHL side, exactly what you would expect. A very low number for Game 1, but up from last year exclusively on cable. If you add in the Canadian viewership, obviously it looks a lot better. It's up to you if you want to determine whether the NHL's popularity in this country or the NHL's popularity in North America is what you care about. Because I'll put it this way. You only ever hear about the combined North American figure when Edmonton's in the final. Next year, if there's no Canadian team, that combined North American figure is going to look pretty bad and no one's going to be talking about it because the NHL isn't going to be publicizing it. So to me, data points that are only there when they look a certain way are not necessarily data points that I consider to be all that compelling. But again, it's up to you. 7.1 million with Canadian viewership included, just 3.1 million in the U.S. on ABC. Drew, I'll bring you in.
Yeah, I'm going to hit on the NBA first because, that's what you led with as well. This series really has me thinking, and I don't want to write Dallas off quite yet, right? We're only two games into this. Like you said, they could push it to a game six maybe, and then viewership looks pretty strong. But the NBA, I feel like, might be yearning for an era where they can create another super team like Golden State because they've spent so much time and energy in their most recent CBAs, you know, restructuring how the salary cap works and how players can be compensated and, you know, player contracts and all of that to try to prevent a super team like Golden State from being able to form again. And we're really going to see this now with the new deals if this is actually effective, what the NBA has tried to do, because obviously there's going to be a massive jump in revenue for the league, which is, of course, tied directly to the players' salaries. But all this parity, I'm not sure, has actually been helping the league in terms of viewership, right? It's funny because when we speak of like the NFL, parity is one of the things that we, you know, generally cite as a strength of the league, right? Any team can presumably win on any given Sunday. But with NBA, I'm not so sure that's really the case. I really think that the NBA benefits from having dynasties, teams that have multi-year storylines. And I suppose the NFL is getting something like that with the Kansas City Chiefs right now. But generally speaking, there's a lot more parity in that league, and it's very strong. We've seen the strongest NBA numbers when there have been dynasties.
Everyone wants parity, but nobody wants parity. What you want is five or six teams that are contending teams consistently over the course of years. You don't want random, you know, hey, the Kansas City Royals won a World Series and then went right back to being a terrible team. You don't want that. That's not what you want. What you want is you have a rotation of five or six teams, which you had in women's basketball this year, for example. Iowa, South Carolina, LSU, UConn, any one of them could have won the national title, and they're all compelling, interesting teams. That's what you are looking for. That's what the NFL's always had. And for the NBA, you know, the Boston Celtics are not, to a lot of people, compelling. I mean, it's worth pointing out that if you remember the Boston Celtics winning in 1986, you have to be over 40. You have to be, right? Unless you're one of those people who has an incredible memory from age two. And even in that case, you're 38, right? So you have to be of a certain age to remember when the Celtics were the Celtics. This iteration of the Boston Celtics is a lot like the San Antonio Spurs. These are good guys. They're, you know, role models in a lot of ways. They're impressive young men, but they're not particularly compelling or charismatic. There is not an ounce of charisma in that Boston Celtics locker room. The most charismatic person on that team is probably Joe Mazzulla, and he is pretty off-putting. So look, when it comes down to it, this Celtic squad, you know, Celtic pride, Celtic green, the tradition, the leprechaun, all that stuff that when you hear it in your mind, Brent Musburger is the one saying those things, right? When you hear that, it's Brent Musburger's voice from CBS 40 years ago. And the Celtics ultimately don't mean all that much to the great mass of younger NBA fans. They are not that important, I think, to a lot of neutral fans. And we're seeing that play out in the numbers. I mean, granted, Game 2 did well by the standards of today. But, you know, this series, it's going to be tough sledding to surpass last year unless the games get better.
Yeah, let's quickly go over what we could see from the rest of this series. If Boston ends up winning Game 3 in Dallas, is this a potential, you know, multi-year low for the NBA?
Well, anything lower than the past 2 years is a three-year low. Nothing's going to be worse than a three-year low. But of course, you know, it only makes sense to exclude the COVID years if you're making any real judgment. So it would be the least watched finals if it's lower than last year since, I believe, 2007. So to me, obviously you don't want that for a series that had some promise going in, but if it's a four game sweep, it will be the least watched final since 2007. There's just no doubt. Game five is when you get a bump, right? From 11 million last year to 13 million, or, you know, from 12 million to 14 in 22. And obviously in the old days, much bigger bumps, you know, from, you know, 18 million to 20 or something. But so for the NBA, obviously you would like to see a fifth game at least. And I mean, a sweep would be pretty shocking given how the Mavericks have played.
You know, if you kind of like bucket reasons for viewership of this series into, you know, like what percentage do you think is Boston and Dallas, and Boston in particular, as you said, being a bit of an overrated national media draw. How much is it just the closeness of the games? You know, obviously game one was a bit of a blowout. And then how much of it has to do with, you know, the players, the star power, that type of deal?
Well, I mean, obviously, you see the difference between game one and two. Game two did what I was expecting, which is up from the last 2 years, but not, you know, back to normal. Game one was lower, which realistically, you know, made a lot of sense. That was a 20-something, 28-point game at one point.
In the first half, it was a 28-point game. I think that's important to note.
You know, what's really amazing is that the viewers really stuck around. They did. I mean, it wasn't, you know, great, but the viewership didn't drop all the way off until that final quarter hour and fell all the way to about 9 million. You know, look, that obviously is the big factor, the blowout. You got to have good games. You got to have good quality games. And even game two wasn't that close at the end. Dallas just had kind of a weird run at the finish to make it look a little bit better. But you got to have Dallas winning game three. But, you know, the star power, I would point out, American viewers prefer American stars. They do. And that is across the board. And that is from Luka to Giannis to Otani to everybody, to Federer and Nadal. Like, every international player who is a star here would be a much bigger star if they were American. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously, it's national pride or whatever. But Luka probably has a limit on how popular he can be because of that. Kyrie, you know, you mentioned last week that you didn't really like Kyrie, and it never really occurred to me that there would still be hard feelings, but obviously it makes sense, right? I don't like Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson said that thing on that stream, and every time I see Kyle Larson, I mean, I'm not like cursing him out or anything in my head, but it's like, I don't like this guy. I don't like Kyle Larson. So it makes sense that you would not like Kyrie, and I wonder if there's a lot of people who do not like Kyrie. You know, and if that might be a factor. He's playing some of the best basketball of his career, believe it or not. And obviously, games one and two are not indicative of that. But it's understandable if people are not willing to vibe with him. And obviously, Tatum and Brown, and, you know, they're good guys, particularly Tatum. Brown, of course, has a lot of the same issues that Kyrie has in terms of his views. You know, Tatum is a great role model. But he's like Tim Duncan. I mean, he's very, you know, bland seems harsh, but obviously he's like, to bring in another NASCAR person, he's a lot like Jimmy Johnson. You know, he's just a guy. He's a great guy. He's a great player, but that's about it. So I do think the star power is a factor as well.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
All right, let's shift over to the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, two pretty disparate markets here. One Canadian market in Edmonton, the other the Florida market. Florida not generally known for their hockey. So I would say, overall, looking at the viewership, it has been a bit on the low side, especially when you look at the two-year comparison, the last time the Stanley Cup final was on ABC. But given the teams involved, I don't think it's that bad.
So look, first of all, you said that Florida's not known for hockey. It should be. This is five straight years that a Florida team has won the East. That is cause for realignment in the NHL. They got to do something about that. Obviously the Panthers are not the Lightning. It's very interesting, isn't it? The Lightning are not a bad draw.
Yeah.
People are used to the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Panthers, on the other hand, feel like an XFL team. And I think that the difference is the branding. You know, the Lightning, they rebranded a few years ago to really embrace the minimalism of an original six team, to where they look at times indistinguishable from the Maple Leafs. The Panthers, meanwhile, are still running out a 1990s aesthetic that makes it really seem like they're a new team that has no tradition. Also helps that the Lightning did win the Stanley Cup 20 years ago. So, they've obviously been able to build up a fan base from there. But that is fascinating that the Panthers and Lightning are so different in terms of their drawing power and in terms of their perception, because this is a very different series in terms of ratings if it's Tampa Bay versus Edmonton, in my view. Even though, of course, the Lightning played in two horribly rated series in the COVID bubbles. Look, when all is said and done for the NHL, this is a throwaway series in the United States. The fact that ESPN was able to put out even one press release touting an increase in viewership is frankly pretty shocking given the matchup. If you went to the beginning of any NHL season since Gretzky left the Oilers and said the Stanley Cup final will be Florida-Edmonton, nobody would think that would be a good thing for television. So it is what it is. You're getting the great Canadian numbers. The NHL, the NHL believes in this total North American viewership number. They are putting it out there all the time. I personally don't really think it means all that much, but the NHL believes in this number. And it was 7.1 million, which is up 43% from last year, Florida Vegas, which of course did not involve a Canadian team.
Listen, if there's one sport that's going to get the pass from me for doing this, obviously it's the NHL, because the American market alone, the United States market alone, isn't really representative of hockey's fan base, broadly speaking, right? If we were to start adding Canadian viewership to the NFL numbers, now that would be a bridge too far for me, right? That's just it wouldn't make sense. The fan base is all in the United States. I think it is a more accurate and representative view, but obviously, just like a lot of things in this industry, it's not apples to apples. You just got to take it, with the necessary caveats.
Right. Well, as long as next year, if it's Florida-Dallas, you're still mentioning the total North American audience and how much it's declined from this year with Edmonton in it, mm-hmm. Okay, then fine. That's not really the way it works, is it?
I'm not too familiar with these figures because I haven't looked, in past years. But I'd imagine even if it was Florida and Dallas in a Stanley Cup final, I imagine the Canadian viewership would still add a substantial bump to the American, the United States viewership.
Well, I'll put it this way. The U.S. audience for Game 1 was up 12% on ABC from last year on cable. If you add in the Canadian viewership, it was up 43%. So there's a very disproportionately Canadian audience tuning in this year compared to last. So there definitely is a factor there.
Gotcha. All right, John, let's move on to, I think, probably the most interesting sports media story we have right now, and that is TNT's programming strategy. We've talked a lot on this podcast about TNT's possibility of losing the NBA. And in the meantime, they've gone and kind of bolstered their sports programming inventory in other ways. They've added two college football playoff games in 2024 and 2025 that they've sublicensed from ESPN. They will actually get quarterfinal games in subsequent years of that deal, so 2026 through 2028. they'll actually get some quarterfinal games. They've also added the French Open of Tennis that will no longer be on NBC. They just issued a press release today saying that will be across the entire Turner family of networks. So they're clearly looking to add inventory. But a lot of these, John, I think you'd agree with me here, aren't necessarily needle movers. They're kind of just little crumbs throughout the sports calendar that will keep them relevant. Do you see TNT being aggressive for any other properties down the line here?
Well, you know, what else is out there? You did an article for the site chronicling what the rights are that are available. I don't see Turner getting in on IndyCar. That's too far along, and IndyCar wants to be on broadcast television. F1 could be, and I don't think you mentioned that in the article that you wrote, did you?
I did not.
Yeah, F1 should be up at the end of this year, and that would be a tremendous get. And really, I think, very brand appropriate for WBD, which, let's all be clear here, WBD has a well-established sports enterprise that comes from Discovery. Yes, the domestic side of it is all Turner Sports, but internationally, it's all Discovery. It's all Zaslav, to give Zaslav credit for something. They built up a formidable enterprise internationally. So F1 would be very smart for them to get, given the ratings. And we just saw another week of strong ratings there for F1. The French Open was probably the only other really big fish out there out of all the guppies that are on the market right now.
There's UFC is out there as well.
UFC. Thank you.
I think if they wanted to make a big play and a big splash, that's the property they'd go after.
Yeah.
Obviously, UFC has a pretty good relationship with Disney right now. I think Mark Shapiro, the CEO of TKO, even went as far to say that. But
well, of course, Mark Shapiro did. I mean, he used to have a pretty good relationship with Disney, too. We're still living with the aftermath of the Mark Shapiro era at ESPN.
But I think if they end up not securing NBA rights and they have some money in their coffers to play with, I think that's the property to take a look at. Very, very big growth property. You're bringing in a new audience. And then you can kind of pair that with, the interesting thing is the AEW aspect, because obviously that'd be a direct competitor to TKO, which is now WWE and UFC. In terms of their ability to leverage these new properties with distributors, John, are they doing enough to maintain their current fees? Or is this something where, DirecTV, Comcast, they're going to start playing hardball with Warner Brothers Discovery when it comes time to re-up those deals?
I think WBD's strategy is to say, look at all the stuff we have, but don't look at how much of it we have. Because obviously they have the whole French Open, and that's great. That is, that's the whole tournament. But they have 5 NASCAR races and 2 to 4 college football playoff games. They keep touting these rights. It's nice to have, but these are not substantial rights. First of all, they are the C partner for NASCAR, maybe even the D. I think Amazon and Disney Amazon and WBD are both the C package somehow, but they're 3rd or 4th tier on NASCAR, and certainly, definitely 2nd tier on the college football playoff. So that makes a difference. If they keep the NBA, it looks to me like the only way they keep the NBA is as the 4th tier partner, which the NBA doesn't even want 4 tiers, but that would be how that would be done. They are 2nd tier, maybe on baseball, depends. Regular season, they're like 3rd or 4th. Postseason, they're 2nd. Hockey, that's probably where they're strongest, assuming they lose the NBA, is on hockey. And I think for WBD, they're going to say, look at all these sports we have. We have all of these sports year round. But if you only have a little piece, what is that really? And I don't know if the distributors will make a big deal out of that. Maybe they'll just say, okay, we know you have these games. They're going to be NBA games you have to watch on WBD that you can't get anywhere else, and that would still be valuable, assuming, of course, that a 4th package is something that would even happen. Speaking of which, maybe we could dig into that just really quickly.
Sure.
Because this 4th package thing for the NBA, it's been mentioned a lot. Nobody seems to think it's likely, but everybody's mentioning it. And I'm sure that this is all coming from the WB side of the equation. But, you know, look, if you're the NBA and you can get an extra few hundred million to $1 billion a year without upsetting your other partners, I do think that would be worth pursuing.
And I actually think it'd be very worth it still for WBD. Well, and I actually, you know, I've come around to the idea that I think this is more likely than not. Maybe I've been looking at Patrick Craig's Twitter account a bit too much because he's been a big proponent of this.
Yeah, but from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning. And but if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense for both sides. Like you said, the NBA can get an extra few hundred million, a billion out of a fourth package and avoid the mess that is the litigation that would come from denying WBD any inventory. You're also going to save face PR-wise by being able to keep some semblance of inside the NBA together. That seems to be a big deal when it comes to, you know, the social media aspect of all this and people's framing of Turner losing the rights. And then if you're Turner, I kind of think of it as a calendar, right? When I'm thinking of their inventory, their sports inventory. Without the NBA, your January and February is looking incredibly light. You just have the NHL there. If you can sprinkle in some NBA games to January and February, you're actually not in too bad of shape because then you have March Madness in March and April. May, you now have the French Open. And then you've added some college football in the fall. You have obviously you have baseball playoffs in the fall, NASCAR in the summer. You know, you're kind of filled out when it comes to each month. You have a few things that are actually kind of important. To me, the fourth package is actually seeming more and more likely. And, you know, that's kind of if I had to put my stake in the ground today and say, how does this all end? I think we do see the NBA kind of carve out some sort of probably non-exclusive package for TNT when it comes to their new set of NBA deals.
And, you know, with expansion, that's more inventory. More teams creates more inventory, more games. So there might be room. And you make some great points. And certainly inside the NBA is not going to be the same if it's only on Thursdays in the regular season and for low wattage games. The thing that I mentioned in my article the other day, and I said it was very unlikely, and I still believe it is, you know, to me, why wouldn't, I mean, if Amazon is going to be raiding WBD for talent, if WBD loses the rights, what is Amazon going to do if WBD keeps the rights? How are they going to staff up, right? To me, if WBD wants to stay in, that puts Amazon in a position where, you know, maybe they're at a disadvantage. So maybe if WBD gets in, it's in a joint agreement, a joint partnership with Amazon, where Amazon gets to use WBD talent for its NBA, while maybe carving out a handful of games in the regular season, you know, every Thursday night, maybe one or two playoff games to be simulcast on TNT. And just like with CBS and the NCAA, Amazon gets to use that Turner talent all the way through to the end, right? To me, that's a pretty good solution to this problem. For the Amazon games to be Amazon and TNT, right? That fourth package for TNT would almost be like a sub-license from Amazon in that scenario. That's, to me, a sensible outcome, but I don't see it as likely.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out. All right, John, a quick one today, but I think some important topics covered. Why don't you close this out?
Yeah, we are in the midst of the championship series of the NBA and NHL. Both could be over by the time we have another podcast next week. But the Olympics are on their way. The Olympic trials start on Saturday. And we'll be talking about many more sports media topics next week. So we'll see you then.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.